Up next, we got the responsive cover crops to low rates of soil applied cotton herbicides. Zachary D. Lancaster, Jason Normsworthy, Matthias G. Polano, and Tom Barber.
All right. Well, thank you for the introduction. So as you can see behind me, we have a field that's been planted into a cover crop. And this specific cover crop is crimson clover. Now, crimson clover is just one of the multitude of cover crops that a farmer can choose to plant. And with this multitude of cover crops out there, a farmer might ask, what cover crop can I plant? What cover crop is going to work with my current production system? You can take cotton, for instance. In our current cotton production system, we apply multiple residual herbicides. But how do these residual herbicides affect our cover crop that's planted immediately after the harvest of that cotton crop? And that leads me to the title of my presentation, which is the responsive cover crops to low rates of soil applied cotton herbicides. So a few benefits for cover crops. Cover crops help reduce soil erosion. They help increase soil organic matter. They can also help in nutrient recycling, keeping those nutrients in our soil, not losing them over the winter. They can help in nitrogen fixation, especially our legume cover crops. They can also help regulate soil temperature in the soil. It makes it buffer the soil temperature when you have a cover crop out there. And this can have an effect on weed emergence in the spring. They can change the soil water content, especially like tillage radish, which can help break up the soil and help permeate more water into the soil. And they can also help in weed control, again, from that soil temperature regulation and also from just covering the soil and reducing the amount of sunlight that hits the soil surface. When you take all these beneficial effects of cover crops, we can see a potential yield increase. So for adoption of cover crops, it's hard to find accurate data of total acreage in the U.S. of cover crops. But this was a 2014-2015 study by Sustainable Agriculture Research and Education. And what they did, they sent out a questionnaire, and wherever people who had been farming cover crops, they put in how many acres they had been farming the last 5 years. And as you can see, people who did farm cover crops have been increasing their total acreage. You can see a threefold increase basically from 2010 to 2015 out of those farmers that have adopted cover crops. So obviously they're liking what they see. And again, as many of my peers have already said, in 2014 with the new farm bill, the NRCS brought to the program the Environmental Quality Incentives Program. And this is going to help supplement some of the costs of putting in a cover crop. So if you use a chemical kill to burn down in the spring, you're looking at about $90 per acre for a cover crop. But if you kill it with a mechanical kill, it's more around $86. But the NRCS is going to pay about 60% of that. And that's going to change from state to state. But in Arkansas, it's right at about 60% of the cost of putting in a cover crop. So for the importance of our research, most cover crops are sown immediately after that summer crop is harvested. And there is a risk of herbicide carryover to that subsequent cover crop. And we need an adequate establishment of these cover crops to get our full beneficial effects from them. So if we have an effect of that residual herbicide injuring the cover crop, we'd like to know. And this leads us to our hypothesis for the research, which is over a wide array of cover crops, there will be some that exhibit a tolerance to low rates of herbicides commonly used in cotton today. And our overall objective of this study is to evaluate the sensitivity of cover crops to residual herbicides commonly applied to cotton. So, for our materials and methods of this research, a field study was conducted in the fall of 2014 and 2015 at the Arkansas Agricultural Research and Extension Center in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And the experiment was set up in the field as a strip plot design with 16 total cover crops, which is our main plot, and 17 residual herbicides. But today, since I'm only going to be speaking on cotton, I'll only be looking at the herbicides that we use in cotton and the cover crops that we could possibly use in cotton. And these herbicides were applied at a 1/16x rate. And the reason we used this 1/16x rate was because we did not want to mimic an actual carryover event. We were just trying to figure out what cover crop herbicide combinations could be troublesome in the future and what we should use more experiments to determine. So, just to basically give you an idea how we set this up in the field, we first planted our cover crops in strips across the field, which that's our whole plot. And then our herbicides were applied in the actual plots themselves, as you can see here. So we looked at 16 total cover crops. And I'm going to split this into two groups right now. We have our winter cover crops, and we have our summer cover crops. Since cotton is a summer crop, we're not going to be able to plant a summer cover crop behind it. So I'm immediately going to cut out the summer cover crops and only talk about the winter cover crops today. So for these winter cover crops, we separate them again into two groups. We have our cereal cover crops, and we have our broadleaf cover crops. And really, this designation is going to impact how these herbicides affect these cover crops. So we looked at seven total cotton herbicides. We looked at Invoke, which is trifloxysulfuron, a group 2 herbicide. We looked at Cotteran 4, which is flumetiron. It's a group 5 herbicide. We looked at Direx, which is Diron. It's a group 7 herbicide. We look at Brake Fluoridone, which is a group 12 herbicide. Valor Flumioxazin is a group 14 herbicide. Zidua, which is peroxysulfuron. And Dual Magnum, which is S-metolachlor, are group 15 herbicides. As you can see, we had a wide array of herbicides and modes of actions that we looked at here. But Invoke, which is trifloxysulfuron, and Direx, which is diuron, showed little concern for carryover activity to our crops. So I'm not going to be speaking on those. I'll only be speaking on the other herbicides. So the experiment was planted in the fall of both years. We planted, sprayed, and irrigated in 3 sequential days. So the first day we planted, second day we sprayed, and the third day we irrigated. And we irrigated to activate those residual herbicides into the soil profile. So we're going to move that herbicide down into the soil profile where it can affect that emerging seedling. We took stand counts 2 weeks after application. We took a visual assessment of injury 2 and 4 weeks after application. And our injury was on the scale of 0% for no injury and 100% for complete plant death. Here's how we irrigated. We used a traveling gun sprinkler system to apply irrigation over the entire field. We applied about a 1/2 to 1 inch irrigation to activate those herbicides. Data analysis. Data was analyzed using Jump 12.1 Pro, and data was analyzed as a randomized complete block by herbicide. So even though we set it up in the field as a strip plot design, whenever you look at all the cover crops and herbicides combinations, it gets very large data set, and it's hard to make conclusions from it. So we broke it down and looked within each herbicide themselves and treated that as a randomized complete block. Data from 2014 and 2015 were analyzed together because there's no significant difference between both years. And our means were separated using Fisher's protected LSD at a 0.05 level. Also, any treatments that resulted in a zero injury, we did not analyze with the treatments that resulted in injuries so it wouldn't skew our LSDs, because there's quite a few treatments that resulted in just zero injury at all. So to move into our results for flumetiron, this is 4 weeks after our application. So on our y-axis, we have our percent control. This ranged from 0 to 20%. And on our x-axis, we have our actual cover crops themselves. So our highest injury for flumetiron was our hairy vetch, which was at 15% injury. But it was not significantly different than our tillage radish, which was also pretty high injury at 13%. Then we had our crimson clover, which was at around 11%, Australian winter pea at 6%, and last, triticale, which is our only cereal crop or grass cover crop that we see injured by flumetiron, and it was only at about a 4% injury level. So here's some injury from that flumetiron application. On our left, we have our untreated control of tillage radish, and this picture was taken 2 weeks after our application, and on our right, we have our treated plot with flumetiron. And as you can see here, we have a typical PS2 injury from this. We have the chlorosis of the leaves. And overall, we have a reduction of stand of that cover crop, which can reduce, again, our benefits that we're wanting to get from this cover crop. So on the flumioxazin, this is, again, 4 weeks after application. Our percent control now changed a little bit. We're ranging from 0 to 35% on the y-axis. We have a little bit higher level of injury here. So hairy vetch had our highest percent injury, which was about 28% injury. And that was significantly different than all other treatments. Tillage radish, rapeseed, and crimson clover and bursting clover were not significantly different from each other. And last, we had our Australian winter pea, which came at about 10% injury. But the main point here is, again, this is only our broadleaf cover crops that flumioxazin is injuring. Our cereal cover crops showed zero injury at all, so they were safe. So for pyroxysulfurone, this is, again, 4 weeks after application. Our injury changes a little bit on the y-axis from 0 to 20% now. And our bursine clover, we found our highest injury, which was at 16%. Crimson clover, wheat, and triticale were around the same. And then rye, again, for this herbicide, we found that we had both injury to our broadleaf cover crops and to our cereal cover crops. So it was kind of, it would be more dangerous in that facet. So for floridone, which is brake, we had very high levels of injury to our clovers. As you can see here, we had for crimson clover, which came in about 56% injury, bursine clover came in about 42%. Again, the clovers, we saw very high levels of injury. Our control we have on our left, this is a bursine clover injury 2 weeks after application. And you see our floridone application on the right, and it really resulted in significant injury to that bursine clover crop. So escitalopram, we saw an overall that we did not have a significantly different rating for any of these cover crops that showed injury. But I still wanted to show this because many cover crops did, and it was a very wide array of cover crops that showed injury. We had both grasses and broadleaf showed injury from S-metolachlor. So for conclusions of this research, for each herbicide tested, there are cover crops that exhibited tolerance and others that were sensitive. So we failed to reject our hypothesis. All cover crops were tolerant to trifloxysulfuron and diuron. So if you use those two herbicides in your cotton system, you really don't have to worry about injuring your cover crops planted later. Cereal cover crops are sensitive to pyroxysulfuron and S-metolachlor. And our broadleaf cover crops were sensitive to flumeturon, floridone, flumioxazin, and S-metolachlor. Future research for this experiment, we want to do further experiments on the potentially risky cover crop herbicide combinations. We also want to evaluate termination options for the cover crops and assess the efficacy of these cover crops in a combination with herbicides for weed control in both cotton and soybeans. At this time, I'd like to thank the University of Arkansas Research and Extension System and Cotton Incorporated for their funding of this research. And I would take any questions you might have.
Question for our speaker.
You're in a continuous cotton situation.
Yeah.
Which of these cover crops would you most likely want to use?
Okay, so the question was, if I was in a continuous cotton situation where we're using cotton every year, what cover crop would I want to use? And basically, I would want to use one of the cover crops that shows no injury from any of these herbicides. And I'm sorry, I only showed the ones that showed injury because we're worried about those. But you could use the cover crops such as wheat, very low levels of injury. The only thing you're seeing is maybe 7% from our dual. I think it would be a good one. And rye really showed kind of low levels of injury. I'd try to stick away from our broadleaves. Definitely the clovers, we saw quite a bit from them. So overall, I'd probably try to stick with one of my cereal cover crops because we're seeing a lower level of risk for carryover in those. Any more? Yes, sir.
Well, just, I don't know if it's a question, but just keep in mind that one of the objectives, especially with PBR resistant pig and everything else, is multiple modes of residual activity.
Yes, sir.
So, you know, talking about future research, it may be a typical program with multiple
yes,
modes
sir.
Of actual residuals in, say, glycol every link, by technology, and reduce your number of cover crops to the key ones that are likely to be used because, you know, it's a cumulative effect in some cases. There's more than one residual used in cotton. And,
yes, sir. With this experiment, we were trying to get a broad spectrum and just see, and with our further experiments, we would narrow it down to more of those specific combinations that we could use in that system.
Any more questions? If not, let's thank our speaker.
Thank you.